Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Week 2, Niners-Lions, Peyton in Hotlanta, and the Cowboys in the Northwest.
Could Chris Johnson of the Titans struggle all year long? What's the latest on the quarterback controversy in Arizona, and is there one looming in Buffalo as well?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And we start with our senior editor, Nolan Rocky, our senior scout, so to speak. All right, Nolan, down in Tennessee, Chris Johnson. Last year comes into training camp very late, doesn't have a great season. That's understandable. But this year, he comes in, he's got a contract, he's ready to go, supposedly, et cetera, et cetera. And then last week, just an awful performance. He just could not get it going at all on the ground. So what's going on down there?
I think they have some serious problems on the offensive line. In the offseason, they decided to revamp the interior of the offensive line. They decided to go big and heavy instead of quick and fast. And I think it was a calculated mistake by the personnel department, by Mike Munchak, by Bruce Matthews, the offensive line coach. If anybody knows offensive line play, it's Matthews, a Hall of Famer, and Mike Munchak. But I think they erred in the composition of that offensive line. It's just too heavy inside for that system to work with Chris Johnson. They need a quick offensive line that's going to be able to zone off and create some holes for him. He doesn't have great vision, doesn't have great eyes, and I think the offense right now is better suited for Jamie Harper, the backup running back. He's more powerful. He's better suited for that offensive scheme that they're running right now.
So, Nolan, basically for our novices, what you're saying is that these are some pretty good offensive linemen, but all they're doing is going straight ahead and clogging a bunch of running lanes, whereas with a zone system, it allows the defense to pursue a little bit, spread the field, and let Johnson stick a foot in the ground and go when he sees the seam.
Exactly, and I do think the players that they have inside, Steve Hutchinson, even though he has a big name, he's been to a lot of Pro Bowls, he's not nearly the player that he once was. The age is definitely showing. He can't create the movement that he used to be able to. He doesn't have the same base strength. Leroy Harris and Fernando Velasco, the other two that are plugged in at center and right guard, it's the same story. You know, they're just too heavy to create the running lane that Chris Johnson needs to really pop those big runs that he's known for.
Boy, it'll be interesting to see how they adjust that as the season goes along. Thank you very much, Nolan. Meanwhile, Associate Editor Arthur Arkish is here. And Arthur, Houston decided to wrap up the quarterback, Matt Schaub. After all, if you feel like you have a franchise quarterback, he's the first guy you sign. But we hear that they were in contract talks with Connor Barwin as well, and that didn't get done?
No, they didn't. They had extended an offer to Barwin. From what we understand, it wasn't to his liking. All along, they had identified Dwayne Brown, who received the new deal, Connor Barwin, and Matt Schaub as the top priorities. We had been hearing that Barwin and Brown were likely to get done first, but we're also hearing that despite what Matt Schaub might have said, that he wasn't going to allow this contract situation to become a distraction. It's an enormous amount of pressure, and there's enough pressure down in Houston as it is. They're the clear-cut cream of the crop in that division, and I think that the Texans thought, this is the year we should be able to strike. We don't want to have any excuses after the fact where our quarterback was distracted or anything else went wrong. They gave him a deal that was certainly nice, 4 years with a max value of $62 million, $25 million guaranteed. So certainly Schaub got paid. He's a happy camper, but I think it was somewhat reasonable, the going rate for a good quarterback in today's NFL.
Well, that's the interesting note, Arthur, is that he did come up short of those elite numbers, and this is where they always ask the question and you run the risk, should Schaub have waited? Should he have tried to put up the big numbers this year? Should he have tried to get him to the Super Bowl? He would have gotten a lot more money. Others will argue, hey, $25 million guaranteed isn't bad. That money's in the bank. This made more sense.
Right. I think it was about this being a really good fit for Schaub. He's great in that Kubiak offense. They have the utmost confidence in him, and I think he wanted to put it to bed. And, like I said, he said there wasn't going to be distractions, but it certainly is nice to cash that $25 million and be, pretty much set for life. So he is now, and now he's got to return the favor and get the Texans to where they need to go.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane with us. His beat, the New England Patriots. The offensive line was fine against Tennessee last week. Tennessee really struggled in that opener. But this is a unit you say, Kevin, we should watch closely as the season moves along?
Yeah, it's really a unit that's changed a lot since the summer. We actually ranked the Patriots offensive line as the number one unit in the league back in June, July. But that was when we thought that Brian Waters was going to be there, and we thought Sebastian Vollmer was going to be 100%. Brian Waters continues to be at home, and Belichick doesn't really want to talk about it. The reports are that Waters wants more money, which is something we heard about a month ago, and then he wants to stay close to home. And those two things just aren't working with the Patriots. And then Sebastian Vollmer just is not 100% healthy yet. He only played in about half the snaps in week one, and they've been able to plug and play some of their backups, and it's been okay, but we'll see what happens when teams are more aggressive up front if it becomes a problem.
Kevin, the Patriots are about as set in their free agency ways as anybody in the NFL, and so it would appear that maybe what they're saying here, because remember, Waters showed up last year at the end of camp, stepped right in and played well. I think they're trying to, you know, maybe try and get it done without him. They realize he may retire, and if they get desperate, it sounds like they could always call and offer him a little bit more money.
Yeah, you know, that's just how the Patriots have been. They're not going to offer you more money than they believe you're worth. And if they have somebody that can play at right guard that does a fine job, then they're not going to, you know, you try to break the bank to bring Brian Waters in there, especially the fact that they might know that he's perfectly willing to retire. They're not going to, you know, get that desperate for him, especially at this point. You looked at the way they ran the ball last week against Tennessee. You look at that offensive line, at least for now, you'd say, oh, well, they don't necessarily need Brian Waters at this point.
Yeah, 162 rushing yards in a game last week, so obviously they're not in a hurry necessarily in that regard. Kevin, stay with us. We'll have more with you coming up. We're going to talk about the Buffalo situation. Back with more when we continue on this edition, Week 2, Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we continue with associate editor Kevin Fishbane. Kevin, you know, a lot of us were looking forward to seeing the Buffalo Bills get out there and play the New York Jets. The Jets have struggled through the preseason, all kinds of media swirling around them. The Bills were one of these, I guess, fashionable picks to make a big playoff run in the AFC East, and their defense was supposed to be one of the strengths of the team. Wow, what happened? 48 points by the Jets, who couldn't score a touchdown in four preseason games?
Yeah, the Bills really let all their fans down, who were kind of hoping this is the year that the playoff drought ends, and they thought, here we go, we're playing a Jets team that just was terrible in the offseason, and the Jets really stepped it up, and give Mark Sanchez and the Jets offensive line a lot of credit. But on the other side of the coin, the Bills defensive line was not nearly as good as advertised. That whole unit combined for zero sacks, zero quarterback hits. Mario Williams had one tackle in the entire game. And you notice as you watch the game that Dave Wannstedt wasn't really dialing up many blitzes with the linebackers. You know, obviously, they were counting on that defensive line to get the job done. It left their young corners kind of on islands, and they got beat by the Jets receivers. It was just a disaster first game for the Bills defense.
I think what I'm coming away from the game with, Kevin, is going back on the offensive side and looking at Ryan Fitzpatrick and what a horrible game he had. And they made the trade during training camp for Tarvarius Jackson. And not that I want to start a quarterback controversy too early, but when you realize that his favorite target, Fred Jackson, is done for a month, his second favorite target, David Nelson, is now done for the year, you have to ask, how's it going to get better for Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, that was also a big worry because everyone says Fitzpatrick's the X factor. You know, obviously, the defense, well, we thought it had improved. They have some of the pieces on offense. They have a good O-line. But if Fitzpatrick doesn't play well, it doesn't matter. And you watch him, he looked uncomfortable in the pocket. He was staring down his receivers. He just forced a couple throws, threw three picks, one each of the Jets' cornerbacks. And, you know, Chan Gailey said this week that Tarvarius Jackson is not yet the backup quarterback. He's still trying to learn the offense. It's still Tyler Thigpen. But, man, if this continues, I mean, this is a team that put a lot of money into this offseason. They're putting a lot of emphasis in this season. I can't imagine they're going to keep Ryan Fitzpatrick on a very long leash. Even though they say he's his quarterback, they gave him the money. This is their year, and this has to be have to be their season. They have the next year as well. A lot of these guys are still going to be there, but they're really counting on Fitzpatrick. And you wonder if Tarvarius Jackson starts to look good in practice if this becomes a quarterback controversy.
We'll have to keep an eye on that. Kevin, thank you very much. Associate editor Dan Parr is with us. Dan, another kind of a shocker. The Saints at home losing to the Redskins in RG3. What went wrong?
Just about everything for the Saints, Wayne. I mean, you look at what they did in terms of turning the ball over three times. No takeaways for them. That's a recipe for disaster, for losing if there ever was one. They had 2 for 11 on third downs. They racked up more than 100 yards in penalties. Only ran the ball 10 times, only 3 times in the second half. I mean, this just isn't the way you win a football game, even for the Saints, who do things a little bit differently. You know, they can go out and stretch the field and throw it as much as anybody in the league, but when they lose the balance completely on offense and their defense just plays as poorly as it did with no opportunistic style, that's the outcome you're going to get more often than not.
Well, and I think the question everybody wants to ask, Dan, is how much of it had to do with the offseason? You know, the whole Bounty Gate thing. They've now had three head coaches in 3 months. You get the appeals overturned on Friday. They look like a team that's heads were anywhere but on the football field in the Dome on Sunday.
You know, of course, the players that you hear from are going to beat back against that line of thinking. They're not going to start making those type of excuses. They, you know, this is one game that they think they can put behind them and get over it and still feel like they have a coaching staff that's very solid with Steve Spagnuolo on defense, Pete Carmichael on offense, and Aaron Cromer as their your head coach until Joe Vitt comes back from his suspension. But until they start winning games, that's going to be the storyline that follows them throughout the whole year. So I think they acknowledge that. They don't like it, but when you play as poorly as they did, people are going to start searching for answers, and that's pretty much the easiest one you can come up with.
And they're at Carolina this week. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Dan. Executive editor Dan Arkish joins us. Dan, is there a quarterback controversy beginning to develop now down in the desert at Arizona where the Cardinals got a win, but their quarterback situation due to injury mostly is in a state of flux at the moment, isn't it?
Well, I think Kevin Cobb helped himself a lot, Wayne, you know, with his strong performance out of the bullpen. But it's real interesting. Ken Wisenhunt was reluctant to name Cobb the starter in New England. Now, it turns out that John Skelton, that ankle injury, maybe wasn't as bad as initially expected. But it would be a major reach to think that he would be starting. I think Cobb is in the driver's seat for now, but it remains extremely fluid because neither of these guys have shown any kind of consistency starting with the offseason.
Well, complicating things just a bit, Dan, is that they're not all that set at running back either with the continued health questions of Beanie Wells.
It's really interesting, Hub. I mean, they actually could be in pretty good shape here because both Beanie Wells, when he's right, is pretty good, and Ryan Williams, who wasn't able to play last year, they really like a lot. But everybody thought, you know, Beanie would be the main guy, and on week one, Ryan Williams ends up starting, and now people are just thinking that, you know, because Beanie apparently has some hamstring issues now, that Ken Wisenhunt is just going to opt to go with the hot hand week by week.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We've got the games for week two just ahead when Pro Football Weekly resumes. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. In the NFL this weekend, the Bears and Packers began play on Thursday night. But with our weekend airtimes around the country, we focus on the Sunday and Monday action in the NFL. Well, the 0-1 Oakland Raiders on a short week travel cross-country as they head to Miami for a meeting with the 0-1 Dolphins. Raiders have started 0-1 in 9 of the last 10 seasons. They fell to the Chargers in their home opener last Monday night. Since 2003, the Raiders are 5-20 when traveling to the Eastern time zone for a 1 p.m. kickoff. Is that a good enough baseball stat for you? Carson Palmer, the quarterback, 4-6, is a starter for the Raiders, but he's 3-2 on the road, 1-1 in his career against the Dolphins. The Dolphins have also won 6 of their last 7 against the Raiders at home, dating back to 1992, but this is a different era. They're building a new team, and either Dennis Allen or Joe Phillips, the two new head coaches, two of the newest head coaches in the league, one of them is going to come away with their first career win, unless they go overtime and they're still tied. A couple of 1-0 teams meet in Foxborough as the Arizona Cardinals, coming off a home opening victory over the Seattle Seahawks 20-16. Take on the Patriots, who were impressive on the road last week as they took down the Tennessee Titans 34-13. Cardinals have won 8 of their last 10 games. Quarterback John Skelton got the start last week, 14-28, 149 yards, and an interception. Suffered an ankle injury in that ball game, questionable for this week. Kevin Cobb will probably start this week, the latest word we're getting at the taping of this show. He entered the game in relief of Skelton and immediately proceeded to move the Cardinals right down the field for the game-winning touchdown, 6-yard pass to wide receiver Andre Roberts with 4:59 left to go in the game. The Patriots have won their last 10 home openers, which is the longest current streak in the league. In 5 of the last 9 seasons, they've gone on to be 2-0. Patriots haven't lost a home opener since 2001. Against the Jets. Patriots' point of emphasis this season was to develop a running game, Hub, and to that end, they certainly looked like they had one. Stephen Ridley rushed for 125 yards and 21 carries, 162 rushing yards in a week one win at Tennessee.
Wayne, I got a couple clubs here who apparently didn't accomplish a whole lot of anything during the offseason. The Cleveland Browns are 0-1 heading into Cincinnati, where the Bengals return home after getting pummeled in Baltimore last Monday night. Now for Cleveland, kind of a mixed bag. They did have four interceptions of Michael Vick, and that kept them in the ball game. In fact, they lost at home by a point on a last-minute touchdown to the Eagles, but that can be a little deceiving. They gave up 456 yards on defense. Those four picks is all that kept them in the game, and Brandon Weed and his rookie debut was horrible. He had a 5.1 passer rating with four interceptions of his own, so Cleveland really struggling to find themselves. The Bengals just couldn't get anything done against the Baltimore Ravens. Outstanding football team, jumped all over them. They were never in the football game. Keep an eye on this game on A.J. Green of the Bengals. Last year versus Cleveland, just four catches in two games, but they went for 24, 35, 41, and 51 yards. The 41-yarder, the go-ahead TD in the first game. The 51-yarder set up the winning field goal in the second game as Cincinnati swept the Browns last year. Browns are hoping to do better this time in Cincinnati. Minnesota is going to visit Indianapolis, and clearly the story here, AP is back just 8 months after that complete restructuring of his left knee. He has two touchdowns over 80 yards. Nobody saw it coming. And Percy Harvin, the much-injured Percy Harvin, was on the field for almost every play last Sunday. This is a guy who was only on the field for 58% of their plays last year. Christian Ponder looked good, so maybe the Vikings will have some offense. They're going to struggle on defense, though. And Andrew Luck had a rough debut in the NFL in Chicago last week. He sees a much better pass rush this time with Jared Allen coming around the end, but not nearly as complete a defense. Can Luck rally the home fans and his young, completely overhauled ball club in their home debut, Wayne?
Well, Hub, the 1-0 San Diego Chargers play host to the 0-1 Tennessee Titans in the home opener for the Chargers this weekend. The Titans were hammered by the Patriots in their opener last week. The Titans lost their opener to Jacksonville last season and then won their next three games and finished at 9-7, the only winning team not to make the playoffs a year ago. Quarterback Jake Locker was 23 of 32, 229 yards, a touchdown and a pick in his first career start. He suffered a sprained non-throwing shoulder, his left shoulder, trying to make a tackle off a potential interception. He left the game with that injury, and again, the question now is, will he play this week? And the answer apparently is he will. Running back Chris Johnson, 11 rushes, 4 yards. We talked about it in the way we hear it. This offensive line and the running style of Chris Johnson may not be a great match. The Chargers won 3 of their last 4 openers. However, they've been 1-1 in each of the past 3 seasons to start the campaign. Chargers are now 9-9 in September under head coach Norv Turner, having won 8 of their last 12. Running back Ryan Matthews, broken clavicle, did not play in week 1. His status still uncertain for this weekend, although insiders say he probably won't play. Huh?
Wayne, arguably the biggest surprise of the first week of the NFL season, the Washington Redskins went into New Orleans and put up 464 yards on the Saints off the huge rookie debut of Robert Griffin III. Of course, he the player of the week in the NFL for week one, a 139.9 quarterback rating, 42 yards rushing. Pierre Garçon had a big game. And they go into St. Louis, where the Rams surprisingly tough on the road at Detroit last week, another team that lost in the final second. They were led by those new cornerbacks, particularly free agent Cortland Finnegan, led the team with 10 tackles, had an interception return for a touchdown. They had 3 picks total of Matt Stafford, and can they do the same to frazzle young Robert Griffin III? The Redskins' defense was vulnerable, but that was the Saints. A lot of teams give up 358 yards to New Orleans. Question is, what will the Rams' offense look like? Danny Amendola was their leading receiver last week with 5 catches, but Sam Bradford still looking for better protection, trying to settle into that spot. Home opener for the Rams. We'll see what they can do with the Redskins this week.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. We resume with our Week 2 edition of Pro Football Weekly, some of the bigger games in the National Football League. The Houston Texans coming off a blowout win over the Miami Dolphins in Week 1 play travel to Jacksonville, where the Jaguars fell in overtime at Minnesota last week, so the Jaguars 0-1 coming into this game. Texans coasted to victory over the lowly Dolphins with Arian Foster carrying the day with 79 rushing yards on 26 carries, so he had to kind of grind it out. Maurice Jones-Drew, after a long holdout for the Jaguars, at 19 carries, 77 yards in that loss to the Vikings. Blaine Gabbert at quarterback, Hub, 23 of 39, 260 yards and 2 touchdowns, not bad.
Yeah, probably the best game Blaine Gabbert's had in the NFL. MJD ended up with more playing time than they'd hoped because Rashad Jennings got nicked up. But this is still a team with a long way to go. They figure to be fairly good on defense, and they will be challenged this week. Houston Texans, I don't want to make too much out of blowing out the Dolphins. The Dolphins are going to struggle all year long. But I think everybody agrees Texans, one of the teams to beat in the AFC this year, probably right there with the Patriots. And they showed nothing opening day to suggest that they'll disappoint.
Have a couple of impressive week one winners collide in the Falcons' home opener in Atlanta as Peyton Manning and the Broncos come to town. We get the story in this report from Gary McKillops.
Yet another quarterback showdown faces Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. After disposing of Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers in Denver last Sunday, the Broncos face a Monday night road battle against Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. And while Manning proved he was back, going 19 of 26 with two touchdowns against the Steelers, Ryan was dismantling the Kansas City Chiefs, completing 23 of 31 with three scores in a 40-21 Falcon win at Arrowhead. Manning's success largely came in the second quarter when he began using a no-huddle offense. He finished with a 129.2 quarterback rating. But even with Manning and the no-huddle working so well, Broncos coach John Fox says we still have a way to go.
Finding our identity, really, as a football team. I mean, we've only played one game. You know, we do have a new quarterback. I think that's pretty well documented. So, you know, we're kind of feeling our way.
Despite Fox's concerns, Falcons defensive end John Abraham thinks it'll take a major effort by the Falcons D to stop Manning.
The team thing. It's going to be a team thing against Peyton. It's not just one thing you can do to stop him. Everybody knows that he's a seasoned vet, what, four-time MVP. I mean, there's no game when you come to him. You know, you already know what you're getting into when you play.
Both teams also suffered key injuries in their openers. The Broncos put defensive tackle Ty Warren on injured reserve with a torn triceps. The Falcons, meanwhile, lost starting cornerback Brent Grimes for the season with an Achilles injury. Falcon center Todd McClure says it's tough to lose a key player like Grimes.
I really feel for a guy like that that's put in so much work in the offseason and training camp and, you know, to end the season on opening day. With the passion that guy has, it's tough, you know. It's really tough, but I feel like we've got the team and the guys that can step in.
When all is said and done, home field advantage could be the difference in this Monday primetime battle at the Georgia Dome, where Matt Ryan holds a 43-19 record. For Pro Football Weekly, Gary McKillops reporting.
You know, Wayne, there's no question the loss of Brent Grimes, their franchise player at cornerback, is significant, but they do have Asante Samuel to step in, so, you know, not a bad replacement. I don't think that'll be the issue against the Broncos. Can they put pressure on Peyton Manning? That'll be the story of this game for the Falcons defense.
All right. Meanwhile, the New York Giants were in their regular season form last week, Hub. You know what? They opened with an uninspired 24-17 loss to the Cowboys. This week, they host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who knocked off Carolina 16-10 in Tampa. Return of coach Greg Schiano, the longtime Rutgers coach to the New Jersey, New York metropolitan area. Giants struggling in the secondary due to injuries. They may get Prince Amukamara back on the corner. Giants coming off extra rest, having been off since a week ago Wednesday night, Hub. But, you know, when I saw them in that opener against the Cowboys, they just didn't have the same juice they had when they put together that playoff run down the stretch. The urgency didn't appear to be there.
You know, that's been the story of this team under Tom Coughlin for years, and I'm not blaming Coughlin, but they are the most unfocused, inconsistent team I've ever seen. They didn't show up on opening night. It's really that simple. They have too much talent to play the way they did. You have to assume with 10 days to get ready and understanding, okay, it's real. We're back in regular season now. Much better roster than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I would expect them to play much better than they did in their opener.
2 week one disappointments try to get back on track in Buffalo as the Bills host the Chiefs. Buffalo trampled by the Jets 48-28 in the Meadowlands. The Chiefs were hammered by the Falcons 40-24 in Kansas City's home opener. You know, I hate to use pivotal as a word here, Hub, but have these two clubs this early in the season, are they facing a fork in the road?
Well, I think they are, but I think it's a much bigger game for the Bills than it is for the Chiefs. Remember last year, you've got the Chiefs going out to Buffalo later in the season trying to make a late playoff run, and the Bills just pummeled them. Nobody saw it coming. Chiefs will be looking for revenge here. You know, the Chiefs at least lost to a pretty good football team at home. It was understandable. They were without Tom Bailey. They'll get him back. They hope to get Flowers, their cornerback, back this week. For Buffalo, bigger issues to solve, and because it is at home in their opener, I think it probably is a little more of a must-win for the Bills than it is for the Chiefs.
All right, coming up, we've got the Coaches Bowl in San Francisco. We've got the Cowboys on the road in the Great Northwest when Pro Football Weekly resumes. Welcome back to this Week 2 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Well, you talk about disappointments on week one. A couple more get together, this time in Charlotte, and this is an important game. I mean, the NFC South has a lot of good rivalries, and this is developing into one of them. The New Orleans Saints 0-1 take on the Carolina Panthers 0-1. Saints were stunned by RG3 and the Redskins 40-32 last week at the Superdome. Panthers on the road were stopped by Tampa Bay 16-10. Hub, how do you like this one?
You know what's interesting about this, Wayne? I didn't realize how many people in Carolina felt the Panthers are actually an NFC South contender. I know that 6-10 last year was exciting behind an explosive Cam Newton, but I really just don't see that. I don't think the Panthers had a great offseason in terms of upgrading that roster. They've still got a lot of issues on defense. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers showed a formula to stop Newton last week. If you take the run away from him, he's not likely to beat you. Strange stat, but they are 0-7 when Newton throws for more than 256 yards. I'm sure the Saints have seen that. That explosive Saints offense, even on the road, should have no trouble putting up points against Carolina, and absolutely a must-win for the Saints here, as they do not want to go 0-2 to start the season, including a division loss at Carolina. They are the legitimate contender.
The Dallas Cowboys have been off since beating the Giants in the Meadowlands a week ago Wednesday night, while the Seattle Seahawks fell in the desert at Arizona on Sunday. Now, the Seahawks home opener, Quest Field, that's a tough place to play. You've been there, Hub. Tony Romo, however, very good against the Giants. Rookie quarterback Russell Wilson on the road struggled at times, as you might expect for the Seattle Seahawks. It'll be interesting to see how both these teams come back for this one.
Well, and the curiosity here is the Cowboys spent the entire offseason getting better on defense, particularly at cornerback. They're really good there now with Carr and of course, the rookie Mo Claiborne, who's playing well and will get better. That's how they beat the Giants. They took away those receivers. That's what they're going to try and do against the Seattle group of receivers that is really struggling. They're banged up. They're not that good. Braylon Edwards with the big drop last week at the end of the game. And of course, Russell Wilson, the rookie, trying to figure out what to do. He's going to have the 6'4 DeMarcus Ware in his face all day long. This is a tough matchup at home for Seattle. And Tony Romo, you know, in Seattle, not necessarily there, but he's played four games against the Seahawks. All we remember is that fumbled snap on the extra point in the playoffs. The fact is, in four games against the Seahawks, Romo has 9 touchdowns and just 1 pick, so he seems to like playing the Seattle Seahawks.
And you know, Hub, Seattle's offensive line is still a work in progress, and it was a problem in Arizona, and they're going to have their work cut out for them against the Dallas front that sacked Eli Manning 3 times in the opener, as you pointed out. The Detroit Lions had to San Francisco in a rematch of Harbaugh-Schwartz. Round 2, Ryan Woolley with the story.
Even though the Detroit Lions dominated the St. Louis Rams in every facet of the game in week 1, it still took an 80-yard drive in the final 2 minutes to pick up the victory, as Matthew Stafford hit Kevin Smith for a 5-yard touchdown that proved to be the difference. Stafford, though, struggled early in the game, tossing 3 interceptions for the 5th time in his career, but said he was never worried, as he had complete confidence in his teammates.
It's going to happen. Obviously, you don't want to have 3. You don't want to have 3 in the first 5 games, but you don't want to have 3 in the first half of the first one. But, you know, we believe in each other. I believe in all the guys in that locker room that we can get it done no matter what happens to start the game. So that's all we did. We went out there and put a little bit of a second half together and got a win.
Head coach Jim Schwartz, meanwhile, said there was never a doubt in his mind that Stafford wouldn't engineer the game-winning drive because of the amount of time left on the clock and the type of quarterback Stafford is.
Matt never lost confidence in himself. He never lost confidence in his teammates. I mean, he had a very good command of what was going on. You know, he just, and it wasn't like they surprised us with doing some stuff. We had a pretty good handle of what they were going to do, but they made some plays and we didn't. But when it came to fourth quarter, we made a few more plays, and that was the difference.
The Lions now will take their 1-0 record on the road to San Francisco to battle with Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers in an early test for both teams. It's also a rematch of Handshake Gate from last season, where Harbaugh and Schwartz got into it after Harbaugh pushed Schwartz aside following the victory, but Schwartz says that's a non-issue and that the two have seen each other in the offseason since then. And Dominican Sue, meanwhile, says that despite all eyes being on the game nationally because of it being played on a Sunday night, it's just another game to them.
It's 1-15. It's a very good NFC. The only way I see it is a little bit more heightened. It's an NFC team that we're going to possibly face maybe later on down the line. But, I mean, it was just important as it was last year as it is this year.
One key to focus on in the game is the Lions' banged-up secondary, as cornerback Chris Houston on track to return after missing week 1. But safety Louis Delmas likely out for his second straight week, while corner Bill Bentley will remain sidelined after suffering a concussion. In Detroit, I'm Ryan Woolley for Pro Football Weekly.
Wayne, I understand everybody's eyes are going to be on the post-game handshake between the two gyms, but they might miss a great football game. The Lions are going to have to fill the air with footballs. They know that. They're not going to run on the San Francisco 49ers. They really struggled last week at home against the Rams. Was it a look-through game? Can they come out and show their best? Matt Stafford better take better care of the football this week if they want to have a chance to run with the 49ers.
Meanwhile, Hub, the 1-0 New York Jets found an offense against the Buffalo Bills out of nowhere. 48 points they put on the board. Meanwhile, the Steelers dropped a 31-19 decision to Peyton Manning and the Broncos in Denver last Sunday night. I think the story in this game, Jets at Pittsburgh, and by the way, it wasn't that long ago they met in the AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh, but we're going to find out if the Jets' offense is for real against the traditionally rugged Pittsburgh defense.
Yeah, and the Pittsburgh defense was without a number of people last week against the Denver Broncos. They hope to get them back, particularly on defense. They know they'll have Ryan Clark, their safety back. Of course, he can't play games in Denver. And you got to wonder if the Jets, was that a I don't want to call it a fluke. I don't think it was, but Buffalo wasn't ready. This is a much tougher test. They go on the road to Pittsburgh. We're talking about a number of playoff teams last year who we just don't see going 0-2 to start the year this year, and Pittsburgh is one of those teams. A lot more motivation for the Steelers than there is for the Jets in this one.
Stay tuned. We've got the headliner coming up next on this Week 2 edition of Pro Football Weekly. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. The Baltimore Ravens make the short trip to Philadelphia to meet the Eagles. The preview of our headliners provided by Michael Luongo.
It is only week two of the Eagles' season, and already the focus is on the playoff quarterback Michael Vick. Vick had a horrendous performance in the season opener, throwing four interceptions before tossing the late-game touchdown in the 17-16 win over the Browns. After watching the game film, Vick learned he cannot force the issue.
You can't become impatient. You can't try to press too hard. You can't try to rush things. You got to let it happen.
Many have blamed the performance on rust from limited playing time in the preseason due to injuries to his hand, then his ribs. Vick said he can't go into the game worrying about what happened and how it might affect his play.
I'm the one who lived it. You know, everybody else just, you know, watched it from afar and just speculating about it, you know, on what they think. So, you know, that's just, you know, perception and people going off what they see.
Vick said he is aware of what happened and will make sure it does not come back to haunt him versus Baltimore.
I know why I did what the things that I did. It wasn't like it was mental errors, and when it's mental errors, then that can become a problem, but that's not the case.
And Vick has moved past the Browns game and is ready to face Ray Lewis and the Ravens defense.
You know, I can't dwell on what happened last game because, you know, I just don't plan on having that type of ball game again. You know, regardless of what the situation dictates, I think you just have to go out there and just play your game.
On the defensive side, safety Kirk Coleman is concerned about the Ravens' no-huddle offense and the problems it may create.
The fatigue factor of you don't have the substitutions. I mean, if they do a great thing with their two tight ends, so they can split them out, bring them in, so they can do a lot of different things to their personnel packages that they have. But really, we have the guys to match up with anybody they have. We got to be able to play.
Coleman says the Eagles' defense wants to be considered among the best in the league. Sunday's contest will be their chance to prove it. In Philadelphia, Michael Luongo reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
All right, thank you very much, Michael. Time for the Handicapper's Corner featuring veteran handicapper Jim Feist of Jim Feist Sports Las Vegas.
And Wayne, Jim unfortunately tied up this week, but John Cranton, who works with Jim at Jim Feist Sports and JimWin.org, is going to join us. And John, thank you. Week one, some surprises around the NFL. Who surprised the guys in Vegas the most?
You know, there was some significant line movement based on preseason, and we see this all the time, and we call it an overreaction. I mean, one of the games with the Miami Dolphins, they were a 7-point underdog at Houston and moved to a 10-point dog. Well, you can figure out why. The Dolphins looked just horrendous in preseason, and everybody was right as the Dolphins got blown out. But the other two games, the public was very much wrong. I mean, the Patriots went from 7.5-point favorites all the way down to 4 at Tennessee. And you saw them during preseason. The first team offense was terrible. They had trouble with the offensive line. Well, none of that made any difference. They blew out Tennessee, and there was no pass rush from the Titans, which was a problem last year. Plus, they were going with the kid quarterback, and you had Belichick going up against the second-year coach and Brady against the young quarterback. So that really people were surprised by that, but in hindsight, they shouldn't have been. And the other one was Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they were a 3-point underdog at Arizona on the opening line a few months ago. Well, they closed as a three-point favorite. You're talking about a six-point swing, a full touchdown. You don't see that very often in the NFL. And that was because of Russell Wilson. I mean, he was so good in August. A lot of people got fired up and said, hey, maybe this kid is one of the next great quarterbacks. And a lot of people thought Seattle was going to do very well at a weak Arizona team. Well, they didn't. They only scored 16 points. Wilson wasn't that impressive. And even on that final drive, he had four shots to put him in the end zone, and he couldn't do it. So, once again, the overreaction by the betting public, they were incorrect, which happens quite a bit.
Hey, John, we've got just about 30, 40 seconds left, but I know at jimwins.org you guys have got an eye on the Lion 49er game, probably the game of the week this week.
Yeah, that's a fascinating one, a late game on Sunday, and everybody's looking at it as a test for the young Lions, you know, stepping up in competition with this young team. Really, I'm looking at it the other way around, a test for the 49ers. That's because you open the season against the Packers and the Lions. That's two great passing offenses, two potential playoff teams, and we already saw that great defense just smack the Packers around last week. If they can do it for a second week in a row, shut down a high-profile offense, that's quite a statement for the San Francisco to make, with people buzzing about them as being the early favorite to win in the NFC. Plus, you got the thing from last year where the 25-19, the 49ers won at Detroit, but it was the two coaches having that spat. I suspect they're going to be professional after the game, but watch more how the San Francisco defense, if it can stand up for two straight weeks against a dynamite passing attack.
John, thank you very much.
Stay tuned. We've got the Publisher's Pen coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, there's a perception out there that it's been an awfully difficult week for Commissioner Roger Goodell and the powers that be in the NFL, with the three-member appeals panel overturning late last week his suspensions of Jonathan Vilma and Will Smith and Anthony Hargrove and Scott Fujita. And all kinds of reporting came out. It's a gut punch to the commissioner, and he's a damaged commissioner, and a lot of things a lot of people in the media said were completely untrue. The bottom line is all the appeals panel said is that Roger Goodell does not have any authority over the salary cap or contract-related issues. So if any part of those suspensions was due to the bonus payments the players received, as opposed to conduct detrimental for the game, which Goodell can clearly suspend anybody he wants for as long as he wants, well, that's what was overturned. He was asked to revisit his suspensions. He can issue the exact same penalty again. The appeals panel won't do anything about it. Nobody is challenging his power. Nobody has made any comments about due process or the evidence presented. This is what the suspended players would like you to believe, but all the appeals panel said was if you're punishing them for salary cap violations, you can't do it. Roger Goodell and the commissioner's power was not damaged at all by the ruling of this appeals panel.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.